You know, restoring and repurposing existing buildings is good for a lot of things. It's good for business and it's good for communities as well. And now we're going to be talking about some projects in Milwaukee, how they are changing the neighborhood around them. Larry Mueller here for Wisconsin Public Radio, and our guest is Donna Weiss. Donna, founder of Preserve Design Studio. She has a Master's of Science degree in Historic Preservation, a Bachelor's of Science degree in Interior Architecture. And Donna has nearly two decades of professional experience and has been involved through all phases of work on historic properties. I had a look at her website, and it's an amazing number of really cool-looking things that she's worked on. Is there a building maybe in your city that has been repurposed and you want to talk about it? How has it affected the community? What questions do you have about saving historic buildings? Join the conversation. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Donna Weiss, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you for having me, Larry.
Maybe first, just tell us what a historic preservationist does.
We are all trades related to all things historic. No. So what we do at Preserve is a little different. I mean, historic preservation consultants kind of specialize in different areas, and we kind of take on a heavier lift of roles than most historic preservation consultants. And so we do obviously things that you would assume, like building research, National Register nominations, tax credit applications, and administering the tax credit application process through construction. We also do as-built drawings of historic buildings, historic structure reports, historic preservation plans, historic cost estimating of materials. We do, we work a lot hand in hand with the design teams that we're on to really understand what the character defining features are of a given historic site and how those can be incorporated, saved, the material technology behind them, how to refinish them, readhere them, repair them, et cetera, in a responsible manner so that they last long term. So yeah, really,
that's it's a lot.
A lot, and every project is different, which me and my staff absolutely love. So constantly learning, which is great.
There are, I think, a lot of good reasons for repurposing old buildings, but let's talk money for it. What are financial benefits to repurposing old buildings?
Well, there are some really key incentives. The state of Wisconsin is actually. Has a wonderful residential and state historic tax credit. There's also a federal historic tax credit. And so depending upon whether you're a resident and what size project you have, you would actually seek tax credits based on what your project is. So for instance, if you have a historic residence that's listed on the state and national register, there's a 25% residential historic tax credit. And these tax credits can be taken over time so that you don't necessarily have to take them all in the year that you do the work, which is fantastic. On the commercial side, there is a state 20% historic tax credit and a 20% federal credit. The caveat on the state credit is that you need to spend at least $5,000, which most projects can do. The caveat on the federal side is that it needs to be a substantial rehabilitation. So there's a very mathy calculation that we do with our clients to determine the adjusted basis value of the property and site to see if the project meets that adjusted basis, which is called a substantial rehabilitation test. And so that is one of the really large ways that a lot of these projects get funded. But we also see our clients use new market tax credits, use LIHTC financing, the low-income housing credit. They also apply for various grants like the WEDC, Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation has a couple of really wonderful grants that our clients take advantage of as well. So often it's a very public-private partnership that gets these projects done. And as you can imagine, the larger the building, the more complicated the funding stack gets. Smaller the project, the more likely the client can take the tax credits themselves. And then it can just be a simpler process. Yes.
Aside from the financial, I think there are, well, let's have you talk about this. What are some of the other benefits to this whole business of preserving?
Well, partially that there's so many things that are positive about it. And one thing to make a point about is that when you're doing historic preservation, you're reusing a historic resource that has all of this embodied energy in it, all of this craftsmanship, all of these old growth materials that we're saving from landfills. So really, there's nothing more green and sustainable than reutilizing a building that's already here. And so one of the things that we do is try and partner buildings that we know that need someone to use it with an actual user to get these projects back on the tax rolls, producing money for the, you know, for the economy, et cetera. Because a lot of these dilapidated buildings either are, have a very low tax rate or are no longer on the tax roll. So there's that. And obviously you'd be restoring something means you're preserving it, means it's not going into a landfill. So that's green and sustainable. I also want to touch on what your prior guest said, and I don't want to misquote him, but he said bad places sort of equal a quality. It's a quality of life issue. Like your quality of life suffers. And all you have to do is drive through a neighborhood that is disenfranchised, and you realize that all people see every day is buildings that are falling apart and what that can make you feel like. And to that point, Preservation Green Lab several years ago out in Seattle did a study where they watched people walk down the street. It's a really, really, really simple exercise. But one side of the street is all of these multi-scaled, decorative, different eras, periods of construction, different sizes of historic buildings. Across the street is a modern era curtain wall building with no canopy on the entire block and a really, really big sidewalk. And they basically did a person count. And everybody would even go out of their way. And this is all like intuitive. They're not thinking this. People are just doing this, right? They're crossing the street to predominantly walk in front of the historic buildings. So it really triggers that innate like sense of comfort, sense of place. And inherently, you find that neighborhoods where all the hot new restaurants are and all the arts districts are in historic neighborhoods. So it's the places we want to be in, correct?
I've done that myself, as a matter of fact. I will go out of my way a little bit to do that.
Yeah, it's more comfortable. It's interesting. And there's always things to look at. And you see people pointing at buildings, but it's just the scale. It's more human scale. And so that's something to learn from in new design, is that as you're designing new buildings, is to create things that are more human scale at the streetscape. So those are just some of my initial thoughts.
Yeah, well, you've been working on a couple of long-term projects in Milwaukee and that are so exciting in my mind. And Milwaukee, you know, we're going to be taking a break in about a minute, but so I'm just wondering, what are your thoughts on Milwaukee itself?
Milwaukee actually has a really wonderful stock of historic buildings, and there are quite a few development companies, small and large scale, that are really investing the time and the energy to reinvigorate neighborhoods rather than gentrifying them. And for listeners who don't know the difference, is that gentrification means, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, it can be a bad thing, but gentrification really means where you improve the neighborhood to the point that the people that live there can no longer afford to do so. And businesses that are already located there can no longer afford to be there. And all of a sudden, your favorite local hardware store is now a posh restaurant. And so we are really excited to be working on a couple of local projects that are really looking not to gentrify the neighborhood, but to invigorate it and support the communities that they're in. And both of these projects, one of them is incredibly large at just under 400,000 square feet. And the other one is a slightly more small scale, but it is still around, I think, 200,000 square feet.
And we will talk about Thrive on King and Concordia 27. After we take a quick look at the news. Donna Weiss, our guest today, interior architect and historic preservationist, and founder of Preserve Design Studio. We'll be back with Donna right after this look at the news. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR. Talking about preserving old buildings on the show today, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us for Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Donna Weiss. Donna is an interior architect, a historic preservationist. She is the founder of Preserve Design Studio, and they've done a lot of great work in a lot of places. And they're working on a couple of projects in Milwaukee right now that we want to talk about. And as we visit with Donna, I hope you'll join in. What questions you have about restoring old buildings? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could send an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Well, Donna, you've been, as I said, working on a couple of long-term projects in Milwaukee, and one of them is Thrive on King. Tell us about Thrive on King.
Thrive on King, I have the distinction of being the longest-standing project team member. I just entered my decade into the project. Luckily, we are going to get this project done in 2024. Thrive on King project is located at the crux of three different neighborhoods in Milwaukee. It's at on Martin Luther King Drive, and it's at the nexus of Halyard Park, the Harambee neighborhood, and Brewers Hill. And the Thrive on King project is in the historic Schuster's department store. And it is a very, very large building. It is just a tick under 400,000 square feet. It is a meandering mass of additions. So the most historic part of the building is from 1907. It is, it has copper, it had originally a copper storefront, our copper cornices at the storefronts, and some of those details are still there. But the original portion's from 1907. There's an addition from 1914, 1918, 1941, 1948, and 1950. It is more than half of a city block. And the building, when Gimbel's took over Schuster's department store, and then when Gimbel's closed, the building closed, and it had a couple of loose tenants that didn't necessarily use the entire building. And one of our local moving and storage companies took on the building in the 80s and clad the entire exterior in corrugated metal. And that was so that they could insulate. We have all these gigantic Chicago-style windows, and the Chicago-style window has a very large picture window flanked by two double-hung windows, and they're everywhere on this building. So he clad the entire building in corrugated metal mounted onto steel and then insulated behind the metal. So for decades, people were like, well, is the building still there? So step one was to prove to National Park Service that there was still a historic building underneath all of that metal, which of course there is. And the really interesting thing about the building is that as we're working on it and doing our condition assessments, et cetera, people in the neighborhood come up and they remember shopping at this department store when they were children. They actually had three restaurants inside, and they had a very large bakery in the basement that produced thousands of loaves of bread every day to be sold there and to be shipped to the other Schuster's department stores in the city. It's kind of an amazing like neighborhood story, right? And so the building really sat unutilized for decades. And then when C.H. Coakley purchased it to use it for their moving and storage business and added the cladding, which incidentally ended up saving all the historic windows, which was a bonus for all of us. They actually used it to house everyone's stored goods. So basically like, you know, like a corporate files to like we found there was somebody's piano, an old grandfather clock, things like that, like the entire building. And they were driving forklifts over the Tennessee pink marble and hardwood flooring. That's the side story. And so this project, the reason I've been on it for so long is because this is what we call sort of a white elephant building. And what I mean by white elephant in the preservation community is like, what are we going to do with this? It's so big. Who can take this on? And it's because it's a department store, all of the floor plates are completely open. And because of that, also, like, there's a lot of natural light on the perimeter, but not on the interior of the building. So how do you revitalize this gigantic white elephant building in a way that it can actually financially sustain itself, not only for the rehabilitation work, but going into the future? And so after a couple of tries with different developers who Preserve and myself worked with along the way, Royal Capital Group from Milwaukee came in and they put together a development mix and a team and a financial investing stack that actually is working, to the thrill of all of us on the team. And so part of the building is going to be commercial, and the commercial tenant improvement floors 2, 3, and 4 are almost complete and tenants are getting ready to move in. The residential side is under construction. The residential side is going to be senior housing on one floor and low-income housing on the upper floors. The entire first floor is really a community resource, meaning that there's a community shared space with a stage for community events, with community rooms, with a sort of bar, cafe, looking for a restaurant tenant. There's an early childhood education facility on half of the first floor, which, as we're watching all of the designs come to fruition and being installed, it's beautiful, but it's meant to serve the local community. Another interesting thing that we were able to participate in is that there was a call to local artists, because we have an inordinate amount of display windows from the department store. And most of the projects we work on are historic tax credit projects. So those historic display windows are character defining features. And so this call to artists was really to have a room full of Milwaukee's best artists come and listen to the history of the building, but also to submit proposals for where they could put their artwork in those display windows and throughout the building. And there's like a curved solid railing on a mezzanine that is perfect for a mural. You know, there's all kinds of things from like installation work in the display windows by artists to, you know, hanging a custom quilt. Like, so they'll be revolving in permanent art displays in all of those display windows by local artists, which is pretty fantastic. Some of our tenants in the commercial side are the Greater Milwaukee Foundation, the Medical College of Wisconsin. There's Versity, which is a blood servicing center where you can go and donate blood. So really what they're trying to do here, what World Capital's goal is to really create a community resource so that they can have community events there. But there are also the businesses that are there in the commercial side serve the neighborhood, serve the tenants. And also with the low-income housing component, that it also was serving the neighborhood as well.
It's amazing to me. You've got a community space. There's residential housing, essentially, for maybe up to 90 residents, if I'm not mistaken. We've got that early childhood space. There's one thing that I thought was interesting was the Health Equity Scholarship program as well, in the health area. So, it is amazing. How has the building affected the neighborhood? I mean, all this work.
What's really interesting, as I sort of hinted at before, is that the neighborhood's like pleased at first when they see us with hard hats walking around the building. They're like, please tell us we're not tearing this building down, and we're like, no, we're actually going to like give it back to the community. And so that was sort of the first step. There was also a very large loading dock that was added by C.H. Coakley to the back of the building that we were allowed by National Park Service to tear down because it didn't have anything to do with the historic use. And that allowed us to put up a 6-story parking garage so that there's ample parking in the neighborhood. What Royal Capital has done, to get to the core of your question, is they've been hosting community events with their director of the Thrive On Collaborative. Well, they'll have like a cookout. They'll close off Velar Phillips Street, which is on the west side of our site. And they'll have cookouts. They'll have vendors there. They'll have some of the tenants there with tents. Like, they've really made, through community listening sessions and events, they've really tried to reach out to the community to reassure them about what's going on, but also to let them know, second floor is all senior housing. Like if you have a senior that needs affordable housing, these units are going to be beautiful. You know, obviously it's designed as affordable housing, but I mean, they're really well laid out units. Engberg Anderson is the architects on the project, and both of the architects leading the separate sides, commercial and residential sides, have done a really amazing job of highlighting the historic spaces. We've worked kind of hand in hand with them on certain things that we need to keep and we need to restore and need to integrate into the design. But really like making sure that this is really giving something stunning back to the community instead of something that is not an invigorating, re-energized space.
Dawson in Trempealeau County has a question for us. Let's go there. Hi, Dawson.
Hello. I was wondering how you balance the needs of the businesses and ways to attract the businesses and preserving the building and the way reasons that it's famous and historic.
Yeah. So balancing between business and historic features.
Well, actually, that's a really great balance to hit. One of my favorite aesthetics is when you have very historic things just juxtaposed by very modern things, because both of them sort of highlight each other. And so what's really great about the historic, reviving a historic building is you get the natural patina of age from these really great, rich materials. And then through the historic tax credit program, we're allowed to put new wall partitions in that have more modern finishes on it. So you get this dichotomy. And the result is actually a really enlivened space that people want to be in. It's the same as the metaphor of walking past, you know, the more decorative, lower scale building versus walking past the, you know, the curtain wall structure. It's very appealing. It sort of speaks to our soul about like, you know, where we want to be. So having the feedback we've always gotten, and we work in a historic building ourselves, is the feedback is really like people love that historic vibe. And it's been really great on this Thrive on King project to really have like people from the Greater Milwaukee Foundation and from Medical College of Wisconsin actually be really excited about the spaces that they're going into.
The other project I really want to mention is and talk about a bit is the Concordia 27 project. And maybe talk about the building, maybe how it's different from the Martin Luther King Jr. Street project or the Thrive on King project.
So for those who are not familiar, the Concordia District is a really amazing district of historic buildings in Milwaukee that is primarily grand residences. Really, a lot of mansions are there. And it's a very, I wouldn't say very disenfranchised neighborhood. It's sort of a mix of disenfranchised residents, but also like people who have bought in buildings and really restored the houses. So this commercial district, we created a National Register Historic District at the apex of 27th Street and Wells in Milwaukee a few years back for the purposes of these commercial buildings being able to utilize the historic tax credits to reinvigorate these, rehabilitate and reinvigorate these historic edifices and find uses for these buildings, because the commercial buildings have been very underutilized and frankly pretty neglected. And so we've been working with a developer, Rick Wiegand, who owns the Ambassador Hotel in Milwaukee. And so he actually owns the two buildings that are the Concordia 27 project. He also owns the Tower Theater, which is in the historic district, and the Doctors Hospital, which is also in the historic district. And so the Concordia 27 project is actually two historic buildings that have been joined together basically for this project. The first building is 1927 Cecilia Building. It was built first floor commercial, three stories of apartments, and by Dickenbauer Architects. Dickenbauer designed an addition called the Annex to it a few years later that is interesting in that it's very quirky. It's a two-story commercial building on the street, but behind it is a really, really large car garage. And historically, there was, if you look at the very fuzzy historic photographs, there's an opening in the storefront at 27th Street where cars would drive through the building to get to the big, you know, car garage in the back to have their vehicle serviced. It's kind of hysterical. And so this is really like, this has been sort of a project where that is very near and dear to all of our hearts, because this is yet another project where they're really trying to re-energize a neighborhood and give them services that they do not currently have. And so Near West Side Partners, which really is at the front lines of really, it's a conglomeration of building owners and businesses in the area that are really, you know, this is a neighborhood just to the west of Marquette University. Near West Side Partners is really working on enhancing safety, housing, and entrepreneurial programming for residents and business owners in the area. So their offices are moving into the first floor. We're also, the Milwaukee Center for Independence just opened on site a commercial kitchen. It houses Wisconsin's second largest school-based meal program. Their goal is to get up to 18,600 meals daily for low-income children in early childhood, after school, and K-12 programs. They are, I believe, our first tenant online in the building. They also have this kitchen incubator space for culinary, basically where they can have cooking classes, things like that for the neighborhood, and also house events. They went online, I think, about 3 weeks ago on the first floor. There's also another tenant that's scaling wellness in Milwaukee. It's going to be their headquarters is on site. It's resilience and trauma-informed care and education, as well as workplace trauma training for Milwaukee employees. And then Fruition Milwaukee is another tenant that supports workforce and business development through co-working space for professional creatives. And there's also Wiegand Enterprises, who's Rick Wiegand's development company, is going to be moving his offices there. And then there's some communal space for job fairs, workforce training, cooking demonstrations, health navigation support, et cetera. And the upper floors of the Cecilia building are going to be low-income housing for working, you know, for basically low-paid people in the workforce, basically. So working people who make, you know, minimum wage, et cetera.
I got to believe this is just going to be fantastic for the community, what it will do for the community.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that went online first is our first stage on that project was to restore the historic storefronts. Because obviously, like, again, like, life on the street is so important. It not only is it a traffic calming measure for cars speeding by, but it's also like your sense of safety. It's your sense of pride in your neighborhood. And the storefront was completely obliterated. And what we found in our research is that it was a really unique storefront in that it was a copper cornice that actually pushed out proud of the main building wall, which is really unique. I don't know that I've ever quite seen exactly anything like this. And we recreated that and put the exterior lighting back on, recreated all the historic storefronts. We had one historic storefront bay that was remaining mostly that was rehabilitated and restored. And that was the first thing that we did. And when all of the plywood came off the building, everyone was like, oh my God, like this looks amazing, right? And we still have so much to do on the project. Like we haven't really started the apartment units yet. Like it's been designed, but like the actual construction work is not very far along. And so it's really attracting a lot of attention. And it will really be a gift to the community.
Oh, I mean, I imagine the community is just eager to get this completed. It's got to be something. Somebody, a listener emailed to ask what building would you most like to see addressed for preservation work in Milwaukee, other than the ones you're working on?
Well, that is a very timely question. I thank your listener for that. So we have a building that is on the it's a site that's on the National Register of Historic Places. And so it is the remnants of the A.O. Smith corporate headquarters. So it's several buildings right on the exact street it's on, and I'm not coming up with it at the moment. But one of the buildings is the original office building from the turn of the century for the A.O. Smith company. And for those of you not familiar with A.O. Smith, it is amazing the things that were invented by A.O. Smith. Like as a Wisconsinite, if you drive down the highway and you see one of those really blue silos, that is A.O. Smith. They also like were pretty essential in like being able to actually for the Ford Motor Company to actually be able to do their product, their like assembly line production process. Like there's a lot of things, including innovations in world for the World War II that we really need to thank A.O. Smith for. So one building on site at the A.O. Smith campus, it's the engineering research and engineering building. It's termed Building 65. It is a 1930-31 modern building. It looks very, very, very much more modern than it actually is. If you drove past it, you'd think it's from the 50s. It was designed by Halliburton Roach, who is a very well-renowned Chicago architecture firm. And A.O. Smith themselves actually developed some of the technology that allowed this curtain wall, steel curtain wall building to be constructed. And it's currently owned by Milwaukee County because A.O. Smith was taken over by Tower Automotive. Tower Automotive closed, so the city ended up with all these buildings. They've been trying to sell them, and Building 65 is a hard sell because it's, you know, it's a very, very modern building. It doesn't lend itself necessarily to residential, and it's got some deferred maintenance, dilapidated conditions. And it may very well be, from our research, the very first curtain wall and steel building in the United States, if not the world. And so we've been working with the National Park Service to execute a letter of inquiry to have it elevated to National Historic Landmark designation, which is the higher echelon above National Register designation. And it definitely has the merit to do so based on all of the innovations that were created on site, including Building 65 itself, but all of the things that A.O. Smith actually invented in the research building on site. I mean, it is
amazing.
And unfortunately, if we can't find a user for this building, like, what do? Like, you can't save everything, but this is way too important to me to let go.
Well, you're doing some amazing work, Donna Wise. Thank you so much. And I hope we can have you back again. I think there is a lot. I'm sorry we didn't get to all the callers. But perhaps you'll come back and be with us again, and we'll look forward to it. Thank you so much, Donna Wise.
You're
welcome. Founder of Preserve Design Studio. And thank you for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller.